You're here on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, and we're talking to Josh Pitterman about his new album, named Josh Pitterman.
Self-titled.
Exactly, self-titled.
Just couldn't come up with this name.
Couldn't come up with anything half decent,
so
I
just went with my name.
Well, why not? It's a trust.
It does say, with the City of Prague Philharmonic.
I gave them some credit as well, too.
And produced by...
By John Former.
Hello, John.
That was magical, the way you did that. What a segue. Just happened to be driving past, so I thought I'd pop in and see how you are.
Now, why and how did you get involved with this album?
Look, that's a very good question. I think we started working on this in the 1960s, didn't we?
Pretty much.
It was quite a while ago. Now, look, Josh, I have been a fan of Josh's for many years, and I can't remember how it was that we actually first got together. I remember I heard you talking earlier today about the very first workshops that we did, and it's amazing some of the ideas from those very, you have to edit out a lot of ideas as you go, and there are probably 30, 40 songs that you had on, you know, consideration for a while, but there's still a couple from those very early workshops that made it right through to the finish line. But I can't remember how we actually started on this.
Well,
how did we start, Josh?
It was actually a fan of both of ours, a Sydney radio announcer that nobody would know by the name of Alan Jones. And he saw me in West Side Story about a half a dozen times, and he asked me, what are you going to do with your music? You need to bring a CD out. And I said, I'm not sure. I haven't really thought that far ahead. I'd love to do one. He goes, well, you need to meet John Foreman, and I'm going to tee you guys up. So we met up,
It's Alan. Well, it's interesting because your listeners would know Alan, I guess, from his sort of colourful radio and television personality.
I thought you were going to say his colourful ties.
And matching pocket handkerchiefs. But what people may not know is that he actually is quietly a big supporter of the arts and of people in the arts, and that's what it might actually surprise people, you know, because he's, as I say, quite forthright in his views on various subjects. But when it comes to sort of supporting singers and artists, he's on the board of the Talent Development Project in Sydney, which I'm on as well. And he brought us together. So there
now,
you go.
Why did you think that, Josh had the ability to pull a whole album off and for it to do as well as this? Because there's so many people out there, isn't there? But although Josh has got an amazing voice, hasn't he?
Yes, he has amazing voice, amazing stage presence. Also, just, talking purely vocally for a moment, Josh is one of those singers who, yes, has a pure operatic voice, but also crosses over into the pop world and the music theatre world and that sort of thing. And that just means when you're in the studio, you can get different colours out of the voice, so it's not the same sort of tone all the way through. So that when he's sitting here next to me, when he's tackling the pop songs, you know, with perhaps with a different language or in a different sort of context, there's a bit of an edge to the sound, which I think is really important. There's also, he's not sort of singing at full volume all the way through. I think that's really important that there's light and shade.
Yep.
But also, I guess, you know, he had some runs on the board. I heard him talking earlier about West Side Story, the role in Beautiful, and I knew that Sony were quite, enthusiastic about his abilities as well. And the other thing that Josh has been really good at has been, being persistent with this. A lot of people have ideas and then give up on them after 5 minutes because things get too hard. And there have been, it hasn't been easy all the way. There's been quite a lot of hard work that's had to go into this. And, he's been travelling the world. And, we started off with a little workshop up in Sydney in a little live venue, which if you saw that workshop, really, you'd have no idea that it was going to finish up with a Prague Philharmonic Orchestra. So I've been a fan of Josh's for some time, and I wasn't surprised that it debuted at number one on those charts, but of course I was absolutely rapt.
Now, you said earlier that there's a couple of songs from those initial workshops that are still there. How did the process go of eliminating or adding songs? Josh, let's start with you from your perspective. Were there times when John said, no, Josh, that one's not going to work, chuck it out?
John is too diplomatic to ever say, no, that's not going to work.
But... Or does he lose the tape? Maybe he loses the tape.
he just sort of, he gives you that sort of, That uneasy look about, maybe it's not going to work. So it was a version of Kissing You by Desiree from the Romeo and Juliet movie that I really loved, but I just couldn't pull it off, basically. I was just, there was no way this song was going to work.
Maybe that's album number two.
Maybe, yeah, I'm just never going to achieve that song. I can just listen to it and love it.
So why, John, why do you think that didn't really quite work?
It's hard to say. We couldn't quite find a place for it to sit vocally, I think. And because that recording from that movie is so iconic and it takes you to a particular place and time, and that particular vocal is so sort of dependent on a very particular style of vocal licks and stuff, which I can't even recreate now. But if you picture the song in your mind and you picture Desiree singing it, it's sort of hard to imagine anyone else doing it. I mean, maybe, and I guess the other thing is when you've got 12 to 13 songs, we finished up with 13, didn't we? So
12.
Oh, yeah. I thought there was 13.
Well, there's an extra bonus on iTunes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's okay. So 13 if you get it on iTunes. And you've got 30 or 40 to choose from, you do have to just cull a lot of really great ideas. So it's not necessarily the case that was a bad song. And I guess when you're talking about being diplomatic, I'd be looking at those thinking, yes, this isn't bad, but I think this one's better.
Yep.
So if you have to choose between these two, we keep this one and ditch the other one.
And I think what we came back to in the end, which was one I was for some reason trying to avoid, which is what we did in that original workshop, was Hallelujah.
Yeah.
And I tried to avoid it because I felt like, oh, it's done and I can't bring anything new to it. And then when we played around with it after, you know, when we came back to it in, when did we do this stuff? 2017, last year, yes. When we were sort of doing the bulk of the work, I found lots of new things that I hadn't been able to feel 6 years before.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, and I now I love that version of that song.
Look, it's interesting. I learned something very interesting from a comedian who said, I remember, it might have been Jim Owen, somebody like that, who was saying, you know, comedian tells a joke once and then you've heard it. You don't want to hear it again. A singer, the more they sing the song the more successful it is. So I think it's great to have songs on the album that people say, oh my God, I love that song, and they want to hear your version of it. So rather than that being a weakness, I think the fact that it's such a popular song makes it a strength because people want to hear your unique take on it.
All right, guess what? We're going to play it.
How did you do that?
That's magic.
Of radio.
We're talking to Josh Pitterman and John Foreman here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do ya? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king. Thank you. seen this room, I've walked these floors. I used to live alone before I knew you. So I've seen your flag on the marble arch. No, love is not a victory march. It's a cold and it's a broken heart.
Here on Joe 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, we're talking to Josh Peterman and John Foreman. Now, we just listened to Hallelujah, and then you wanted to talk about why you chose that song.
Yeah, so as we talked about before, there were so many songs to choose from, and they all have a different meaning to me in my life. They bring up some sort of something good or even something bad, but it's always pretty nostalgic. And that one was, you know, obviously it's a Leonard Cohen classic, but I got into it through Jeff Buckley and my sister and my mutual appreciation for music and her sort of showing things to me. And I remember at that sort of time, Lara, my sister, was really into Jewel, Pieces of You, that album.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeff Buckley.
Yep.
And that version of Hallelujah, like, I remember is like I would have been no more than 11 or 12. I reckon I was in grade 6 or something, and yep. I just remember how haunting his version of how affected he was and how damaged he was. And I always just loved his version of it so much. But I love K.D. Lang's version too.
Like, but Jeff Buckley, a lot of people thought that he wrote it.
No, but he connected to it so much. Oh my God!
And then, of course, as you said, K.D. Lang, who had pretty much the big hit from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they all did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully fourth time lucky as well, and I get a big hit.
John, what's your opinion of a song like Hallelujah? You know, why is it such a song that's universally sung by so many people and been a hit a few times?
I think it's a really intriguing storyline. You know, there's sort of a lot of unanswered questions when you listen to this lyric. What actually is he talking about? You know, you tied you to a kitchen chair and he cut your throat and just brushed your hair or whatever it is. I can't remember the exact lyrics, but there's every time I listen to it, I think, what on earth is going on? It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. And I've heard people sing this kind of the wrong way, like hallelujah, like it's a celebration, but it's an ironic hallelujah. Yep. It's a cold, sad, it's almost like the blues, although it's not a blues progression, but there's something intriguing. And also it doesn't hurt if you say the name of the song 10 times every chorus. You know.
Yeah, exactly. It's an easy way around.
If you come out wondering what that song's called.
Now, you've worked with K.D. Lang when she's performed it.
Well, that's right. She came out to perform it on the Logies some years ago, and it was interesting. It was my first ever attempt at being a sort of an associate producer or a music producer on a show like that. The late Adrian Delavergne, who was fantastic executive producer, got me to book the acts that particular year for that show. And K.D. Lang, you know, I was chatting to the record company about that particular song we wanted to perform, Hallelujah. And the record company said, no, she's not going to perform that because she will only do the full 6-minute version, and we know that TV won't accept a 6-minute version, so, you know, she'll have to do something else. And I went back to the executive producer, who sadly is no longer with us, but when I said this to him, he said, oh, we'll give her 6 minutes, that's fine.
Wow.
We'll let her do the 6-minute version, which is so un-television.
Yeah.
And she came out there with the piano, strings, double bass. I don't think there was any drums. It was just that beautiful acoustic sort of, it was, you know, like all acoustic instruments, and her out there barefoot and the room was silent for 6 minutes, and it was one of the great Logie moments. And
I got chills right then when you were talking about it. I remember seeing it and just sat there spellbound by it. And they showed the sections and all the TV celebs, and they were all sort of in awe or mouthing the words with her. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Everyone knows the lyrics.
Yeah, and that was Adrian's genius. And I was new to that particular role. I wouldn't have had the confidence to say, right, let's give her 6 minutes. Because people always want to keep things short and sharp and that sort of thing on TV. But sometimes if you treat the audience with a bit more respect and respect their intelligence, they will come with you for the ride. Yep. And that's what I learned from Adrian.
Brilliant. Now, Prague, the orchestra, hello? You didn't use some little amateur group down the road or something. you go the full throttle off to Prague.
Yeah, I mean, I am not one to do things by heart. it sort of came about, fortunately, like John and I were talking about different orchestras that we could use, and financially I just didn't have the budget to use that many, musicians with an Aussie orchestra. But I had done some stuff with Prague with the Ten Tenors, and because they do a lot of their stuff, and so I got in touch with an old friend who I actually went to high school with, and then went to uni with, and then did the Ten Tenors with, a very talented musician and singer called Graham Foote, and he lives in London now, and he does a lot of work with them.
Yep.
And I said, hey, what would be the chance of working with Prague on this? And he made one call and literally got back to us almost immediately and said, they're really keen, let's do it.
Wow.
And that's when the whole thing transformed really quickly, because beautiful rehearsals were about to start, and we literally had about 6 weeks from that call to beautiful rehearsal starting to get it all done.
Wow.
And we were still at a stage then when it was just piano and vocals, and John and I had recorded what we sort of had the idea of doing with these songs, but they hadn't been orchestrated yet. And John's magnificent, and this is how I explain why John's brain's so good. If people don't know John Foreman, just PS, GMA, the Carols every year, Australia Day concert.
Yeah, born at a very young age.
He's done a few things. And what John can do is, like, when we're on the piano, like, Unchained Melody is the best example of this, is I said I don't want to do it the standard arpeggio version. I don't want to do it traditionally. I want to do something different. He goes, well, what about if we start with an intro where the flute goes da 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 da, and then the French horn goes da 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 da, and then it all comes together with a sweeping string line going da 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 dum 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 dum, and then you come in with oh my love, and I'm like, that would be amazing. And that's exactly how it happens. He just hears it in his brain and then plays it on the piano, and I don't know anyone else who can do it that brilliantly. And we did that he did it time and time again with every track.
But, you mentioned Graham Foote there, and he was so instrumental, if you'll pardon the pun, in terms of pulling this together great team of arrangers over in London under his direction. And the Prague Orchestra are really set up for this sort of thing. They are in the studio pretty much every day, and now a lot of the leading movie soundtracks people like Sarah Brightman, there's just
Paul
stuff happening in there all the time. And so, as you say, Graham and the Ten Tenors have been recording over there quite a bit. So they were able to set it all up, and it was quite an experience.
Did it pretty incredibly. Like, Graham looked after the musical supervision of it, so he had all the orchestrations ready to go. The conductor, who also orchestrated a couple of tracks, a guy called Paul Bateman, who conducts for Sarah Brightman, was in there conducting. James Fitzpatrick was in there producing. He looks after the orchestra. And they did it all in a matter of hours.
Wow.
I mean, they did the whole thing in one day, and we actually got to go back and double up on certain tracks, have extra strings on certain tracks, because they did it so efficiently. Like, they're unbelievable, and they sound magnificent. They don't sound like they've just, flushed it out there quickly. They sound like they've given their heart and soul to every single track.
Now, John, did you go over?
No, this is the wonders of modern technology. And again, making sure the budget goes in the right spot. So rather have an extra few violin players or, an extra bit of, double bass, strength or some more violas rather than my airfare. And the beauty of this is that I can sit in my studio in Melbourne with, the fabulous NBN or whatever it is that I can't even remember what system I'm on, but I was able to listen in almost real time and talk to the producers and talk to the conductor. And it was almost like being in the control room. You know, if we were here and there was an orchestra next door, you're not actually in there with them.
Yep.
I mean, I would have loved to have been there, but in terms of making a new independent artist, well, now you're with Sony, but at the time, you know, when you're pulling this together yourself, I think you have to make sure the budget goes into the sound of the product. So for me, I would have loved to have been there, but it was almost as good.
I was there waving at you.
It was certainly as effective. I mean, it's amazing now. You just take for granted the fact that I can sit there with a live camera seeing what's happening in the room and full quality, high definition stereo sound coming through my speakers, you know, a second or two later. Right. And it was a great experience.
Wonderful. Josh, you've been choosing the songs today that we're playing. Which one are you going to choose now?
It's a song that that I first heard from doing the Ten Tenors, and I wanted to do something a little bit different with it. It's from the Gladiator film. It's called Il Gladiatore, and I wanted to do something a little bit different in it. It's got this beautiful angelic kind of choral component to it, but I wanted to make that an individual voice, and I thought, who better to choose than the lady who plays Cynthia Weil in Beautiful, Lucy Maunder, who has a voice like an actual angel.
Wow.
So to share the stage with her every night is one thing, but to have her voice on the album is something pretty special. And I don't think Lucy knows how grateful I am. I'm trying to express it every time I see her about, but I am very, very grateful to have her on it. And, you know, listeners will hear it. She sounds like something from heaven.
Okay, so introduce it for us.
It's Il Gladiatore.
Here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine. You're here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine. We're talking to Josh Pitterman and John Foreman. And guys, we've come towards the end of the show again.
The hour goes so quickly.
And you thought we were going to have trouble talking, you know. You obviously don't know David and myself. We can talk forever.
And John's pretty good.
That last song was just absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, she's magnificent, isn't she? Her voice is just, and so is your voice.
Now, to wrap up, we want to play one more song, which was Iris. Can you just tell us very briefly about...
Oh, well, Iris is a Goo Goo Dolls classic of the 90s. But what I love most about it is it's the first song that's on the album. It's the first song the orchestra played. And I remember standing in the midst of 62 musicians and, you know, as soon as they started, the tears just started falling down my face.
It's a very
emotional track for me.
20 seconds of it. If you want to hear the whole thing, you'll have to buy the record.
Let's play that before the news comes on.
Solo questo momento conta.